Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because, well, we have with us, hopefully this evening, Mr. John Vinson. He works in Washington, D.C. with the American Immigration Council or the American Immigration Foundation. Now, Mr. Vinson, what's the name of the organization you work with?
Americans for Immigration Control.
All right, fine. And certainly concerned about the unbridled immigration into America, which is really creating tremendous problems. And will continue to produce increasing problems if left unchecked. So could you tell us, just our listeners, a little bit about your organization? I know you've been around for a long time. We've interviewed you before. But I don't think the average individual really realizes that America is being invaded today by people with a different culture who have no loyalty to America. And if left unchecked, this will change America forever.
Our organization has been around since the early 1980s, and our mission is to lobby the congressmen in Washington and try to persuade them to change immigration policy to what I would call a policy of immigration moderation. There are two extremes now that rule. You have the business interests that want cheap labor, and then you have the political interests that want cheap votes. They are the extremes. We are in the middle. We want immigration moderation. We want legal immigration cut down to around 200,000 a year, which is the historic average. And we want our laws enforced against illegal immigration. I think, again, this is a very moderate proposal.
Well, it sounds very logical, and yet, of course, there seems to be tremendous opposition to doing anything that's logical when it comes to immigration.
Well, you've got cheap votes, cheap labor, and another thing, cheap sentiment. People get all caught up in the mythology of immigration, and they say, well, my grandfather was an immigrant, and therefore we must keep the doors completely open. I say to this, our grandparents, by and large, are dead and buried. What we need to direct our concern to is the future of our grandchildren.
I think that's a very, very well taken point. And, of course, I think Samuel Huntington wrote about this recently in a book, which, of course, he was severely criticized for by the elite, but saying that if we allow continued unbridled immigration, it will destroy the very fabric of this society, which is built upon the Anglo-American Protestant ethic, and that this is changing and changing dramatically. And with that, we'll change the values that once made America the envy of the world.
Yes. We're not advocating no immigration. Again, we believe in immigration moderation. Our opponents come back and say, well, immigration has been good for America. Now, you're a medical doctor, I believe. Is that right?
That's right.
Well, so somebody came to you and said that medicine is good for patients. Is that true or false? Well, it depends on whether or not the patient is sick to begin with, on what the medicine is, and what the dosage is. If you give too much medicine, you can kill the person. So the issue is the dosage, the kind of medicine, and whether or not the patient is sick in the first place.
Well, I agree with you totally, and I just think that what's happening today, especially the fact that the administration refuses to enforce our immigration laws, number one, that anybody from the Border Patrol who tries to pick up people who are here in this country illegally, is sorely criticized. and the fact that we have, working within our society, people from the great tax-exempt foundations, and I'm specifically speaking of the Ford Foundation,
absolutely,
which is doing everything they can to perpetuate the illegal immigration, forming organizations with our tax-exempt money that is designed to flaunt the laws of this country. It just doesn't make any sense.
You know, Ford has created a whole network of these outfits. You have MALDEF, the National Council of Arava, that means the National Council of the Race, in this case the Hispanic race. And when you criticize these people, they immediately call you racist. You know, it's an interesting psychological tactic. You divert attention from your motive by accusing your opponents of having that motive. It works. It really does.
All right, fine. Well, of course, this has been going on for some time, that this great tax-exempt foundations have been financing these organizations. Isn't there something incongruous with this, that they're using tax-exempt money accumulated, through the great tax-exempt foundations to destroy the very nation that has given birth to this, the great fortunes?
Yes, one thing that's very interesting too is that a number of these pro-immigration organizations get government grants, some huge amounts of money. There's this one particularly obnoxious organization called the National Immigration Forum, and it was either in fiscal 2002 or 2001. In that year they got something like $300,000 in your tax money and mine for their operations.
And being used to violate our laws. So are you on a tech, are you on a cell phone or a speaker phone or something? We seem to be getting a little feedback.
I'm on a cordless phone.
Would it be possible to go to a hard phone? We're getting sort of an echo here.
To do that, I'd have to go to my office. Could I do that? It would take maybe about 15 minutes.
We're going to call you right back. If you'd hang up, we'll call you right back and see if we get a better line, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to ask Dale to call Mr. Vincent back and just see if we can get a better line there, so we perhaps don't have quite such an echo. But I think the important is, so the information is so vitally important. America is under attack today. The Ford Foundation, which has been subversive for the better part of the last century, and those of you who have not yet read the book that we keep in print called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. We certainly recommend to you Foundations, Their Power and Influence is a very, very important book. It was written in 1958 by Mr. Rennie Wormser, who was the counsel for the Reese Committee that was commissioned by the 83rd Congress to find out why the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the Carnegie Foundation were so intent upon bringing communism to China in 1948. Now, that seems like a long time ago. But if we don't learn from history why we're going to be in real trouble, we're not going to understand what's indeed is going on in our society today. The Ford Foundation has always pushed socialism and communism. The Ford Foundation has always been intent upon the destruction of the United States of America. Now, this is what Mr. Henry Ford was up to. Henry Ford was a supporter of communism. He actually built the Gorky plant in the Gorky plant in Russia. He received the highest of rewards from the Nazis that a civilian could receive. And, of course, his great tax-exempt foundation has been busy undermining the fabric of our society ever since then. But the average American doesn't understand that. But then the average American really is a victim so much of what they read in the newspaper, what they see on television, or what they hear on the radio. And it's vitally important that we get information to the American people so they understand who the enemy is. The enemy is not over in Moscow. The enemy is not over in China. The enemy is right here in the United States. In fact, that was beautifully brought out by Professor Carol Quigley in his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, when he pointed out that there's so many people who look and see what's going on, and they think that we must have communists in government, or That there have to be communists at Harvard or of working on the Wall Street Journal, I shouldn't say, and the New York Times. And he pointed out this is not because there are communists there. There are other people. He refers to them as the Anglo-American establishment. But these are people who have a different agenda, who have a different worldview, who really dream a different dream, who want a different world, who are intent upon destroying America and merging us into a world government. We'll be back here in just a moment, and hopefully we can get Mr. Vincent back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to have to wait for a few minutes for Mr. Vincent. So if you're out there in the listening audience and you would like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you'd like to call in, why, we'd love to talk to you until we get Mr. Vincent back in. He's going to have to go to his office. And then we'll get him back on. But I think the subject is so important. And his organization is on the front lines of trying to educate the American people to the tragedy of what's taking place today. And the average American is so wound up with the conventions, and they don't understand that both John Kerry and George Bush are fully in support of the illegal invasion of our country. George Bush has suggested allowing all of the people who are here illegally, well, we're going to give them a migrant worker status. Basically, he's going to make them legal, allow them to become American citizens, to bring in their families. At that point, we'll have another 40 or 50 million people from south of the border. We'll have almost half of the population of Mexico here in the United States. And we will, of course, convert America into a third world country if, of course, our other policies don't bring that about. Well, we've got Jeff calling from New Orleans. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Well, not good tonight because there is hypocrisy going on in this immigration question.
All right, Joe, let's talk about it.
All right. The government of the U.S. is using the very rationale you are using about limiting immigration to prevent anti-communist Cubans who want to escape the nightmare of Fidel Castro from coming over to this country either in boats or in whatever they can get their hands on, and is forcing them to have to jump through hoops at the American so-called interest section in Havana in order to let only 20,000 of them into the country rather than have the Cubans come into Miami and find a place where they can have freedom again. So as far as I'm concerned, this business of railing against the illegal immigration is not taking into account the fact that the government is selectively letting in people from Mexico and other socialist countries to help socialize America while allowing and permitting Fidel Castro to keep this communist regime going in Cuba.
Well, I think your point is very well taken, and I would simply like to point out that what you say is true. What is so incredible is if, you know, we have somebody in communist Cuba today who wants to escape and is willing to risk their lives or their family in a little boat, and about two-thirds of them die, I'm told. They, of course, come across the 90 miles to our shore. They can see America and the possibility of freedom. And then in comes the Coast Guard cutter, picks them up, and takes them back to Cuba, where they will, of course, be imprisoned. Now, what's wrong with this picture if we really believe in freedom? Or maybe there is another agenda going on that the average American doesn't understand.
Well, of course there's another agenda, and that is that we're keeping Castro alive, and we've kept him alive since the Bay of Pigs invasion was purposely stopped by President Kennedy, and under the influence of J. William Fulbright and others in 1961, and we're keeping Castro alive even though he's not part of the proposed free trade area of the Americas, which would put the U.S. into so-called regional government a la the same way as the European Union, the EU, in which our governments will be limited by a supranational parliament which will have regulations for all of the Latin American areas. In other words, we're letting Castro be a base for communism and from Red China, and don't kid about it, Russia is still under communist control with their repression of Lucas Oil, etc. So as far as I'm concerned, we are working to use Castro as a means of keeping the Red Dream alive while we talk about the so-called unlimited immigration from Mexico and other countries.
Well, I think that they really, all of these various things fit together. I think that you are extremely observant. You see, most people really believe that the successive administrations have been anti-Fidel Castro, and they're just so tragically mistaken. People have forgotten what happened back in 1959 when the American State Department ordered Batista to leave Cuba, told him you will leave the next day. And I know that's true because I talked to Ambassador Earl Smith, who was ordered to give that instruction to President Batista. He left, and that brought Fidel Castro to power. We brought Fidel Castro to power knowing he was a communist, but we can't let the American people know that any more than we can allow them to realize that American and corporations and our American government and our Federal Reserve System, our central bank has been financing communism since its inception back in 1918. But you see, they're supposedly the enemy. No, they're the best enemy that our money could buy. And that is the great tragedy. We've kept Fidel Castro in power, oppressing the unfortunate people of Cuba. But I think these are all issues. I think the illegal immigration, the Cuban problem, what's going on, certainly, over in the Middle East, the fact that we are transferring our wealth and our jobs over to communist China, once again building up the best enemy money could buy. We're still finding one or another justification for subsidizing Russia, but the American people can't understand that. They have to think, oh, well, we have to give them money to, so they can control their biological weapons because they're a threat to them and to ourselves and the world peace. And we have to give them money to dismantle their nuclear weapons. But they're building new nuclear weapons. We have to give them money to control their chemical weapons over there. And, of course, our great corporations are pouring countless billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars into the infrastructure over there and the oil elsewhere. But you're absolutely right. The American people, the average American, has little knowledge of what really goes on behind the scenes as we finance brutal tyrants throughout the world. But you see, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And I hope our listeners out there will listen to what I'm saying, think about it, try to prove me wrong. And if you go read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we go into the background of how we started financing communism in Russia back in 1917, 1918.
Now, let me add this to you. I get foreign affairs on tapes from National Library Services for the Blind. I read their Democratic and Republican foreign policy statements, and they mimic each other down the line. The only difference is the order in which they make the statements about supporting the UN and continuing a strong use of force, etc. The Democrats put the UN in the first paragraph, the GOP puts it in the second paragraph, but they all come out the same, regardless of who wrote it, and that's the whole point, that both major parties are unfortunately the same.
You're
in terms of their
right.
goals and agencies. Unfortunately, however, the third parties have problems. The Constitution Party, with its advocacy of Jesus Christ as King of Kings, Lord of Lords, etc., and ruler of America, may be in violation of Article 6, Section 3 of the Constitution, and the Libertarians, with their pro-abortion and pro-free trade with communist countries stance, compromise themselves in that they endorse the use of force against other human beings even when they say they don't. So we've got a problem on our hands.
Well, I really think that the Constitution Party is not going to try to impose a theocracy upon our people. I do believe, however, that both the presidential and the vice presidential candidates, Michael Perutka and Chuck Baldwin, are Christians, and they're not ashamed to admit it, but they're true Christians. They're not like the other people, who profess to be born-again Christians, but if they were ever put on trial, there'd be very little evidence to convict them. So I certainly believe that the Constitution Party stands on the Constitution, and, of course, the Constitution really stands on the Declaration of Independence, and the Declaration of Independence said without any hesitation that our freedoms come from God. That I believe. I do not believe that we want a Protestant or a Catholic or an Episcopalian or a Presbyterian theocracy. I believe that people have to realize that we can only be free if we look to a higher authority than government as the source of our moral actions. But we have to, I believe we have to acknowledge God because that was the way our country was set up. Over and above that, I don't think that although these people are Christians, they're not going to insist that anybody has to agree with them theologically.
Well, I'll have to let you go on this point, but I'll have to think a lot about this before I vote in the election.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much. And, of course, we're at this time, we're waiting to get our regular scheduled guest back, Mr. Vinson. So I will simply ask, if you are out there in the listening audience and you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. I'm sorry. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And if you are interested at all in what our last caller was saying, this gentleman obviously has a very good grasp of what's going on, at least as far as our attitude towards Cuba. And most people don't understand that we brought Fidel Castro to power in Cuba, knowing full well he was a communist. How do I know that? Because I went to Palm Beach, Florida, and interviewed Ambassador Smith. He was the only billionaire I think I've ever spent any time with. He was a very gracious individual, and he said, of course we knew Fidel Castro was a communist. Of course the State Department knew he was a communist when they brought him to power. Ambassador Smith wrote a book called The Fourth Floor. That's The Fourth Floor, and it goes into the background of how we brought Fidel Castro to power, but we can't let the American people know that. We can't let the American people know that we knew that Mugabe and Rhodesia was a communist when we forced the Rhodesians to put him in as their ruler. We can't let the American people know that Nelson Mandela is a lifelong communist. After all, he's the great hero who spent all the time in prison. Well, he spent all the time in prison because he wouldn't renounce terrorism. He could have gotten out at any time he wanted to. But, of course, he was being set up to become the ruler of the next, the new communist South Africa. But, you see, we are adopting all the policies of communism right here in America because communism has nothing to do with redistribution of wealth. Communism creates a new ruling aristocracy. An aristocracy, a massive military and police force, and then everybody else reduced to serfdom. This is the type of government that Plato advocated in his Republic, which was written about 2,350 years ago. And it is exactly the plan that is being implemented today. Well, we've got Rob calling from Hanover Park in Illinois. Hi, Rob. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
Have you a question or comment?
Yeah. I was just wondering, what do you think the government knew? I mean, like, for example, we hear about our war against the communists. You remember the Cold War? You remember how the CIA was supposedly doing warfare? Do you really think that there was warfare, or do you think it was more like cooperation and the warfare was just a front?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that it was a scam. Now, this doesn't mean that all the CIA agents were in on this. I think there were only a relatively few of them, but I actually had the opportunity to talk to one of the fellows from the CIA who was on the outs for the CIA, and he actually came to my home. We spent some time together. Mm-hmm. And there was a wonderful docudrama. It was on television, a serial, for 4 or 5 days. It was called The Brotherhood of the Rose. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you ever remember it, but he was telling me how the communists, the KGB, and the CIA actually many times worked together. In fact, they even had a sort of a safe house they could all go to, and if you're a CIA agent or a KGB agent, you could go there and work together and have fun and frolic. And of course, as I heard this story, I said, you know, this reminds me of the story of the Brotherhood of the Rose. And he looked at me and he said, the story was my story. And so, in fact, the book is dedicated to me. Well, you know, if this man was a psychopath, he was awfully quick on his feet. Because I ran down to the library the next day, I picked up a copy. This man's name was Russ, and of course, there in the foreword, it was actually dedicated to Russ. special to Russ. And I really believe, of course, that most of this anti-communism was simply feigned. Yes, we sent our boys off to Korea to fight and die. But if you read MacArthur's reminiscences, he will tell you that the United States 7th Fleet was placed between Formosa and the mainland, not to protect Formosa from the Chinese communists, but to protect the Chinese communists from Chiang Kai-shek's forces on Formosa, and that allowed then the Chinese communists to take two large armies and move them up into Manchuria to come down and kill our boys in North Korea. And I would simply ask, how did the Chinese communists know we wouldn't pull our fleet out and endanger their coast? There had to be secret agreements going on.
Oh, so you think so? Because you know what it kind of reminded me of? I read a book, and when you were talking about the communists and some of these plots, and I've heard you mention certain other groups that are tied into this. For example, Masons. I've heard you mention it in different groups like the Illuminati. It reminded me of a book I was reading, and it was called, He Died to Set the Captives Free. You ever read it?
I know, I don't know the book.
And what the lady was saying was that most of these members of these people, of this particular cult, were high-ranking, some of them were high-ranking members of the government.
Well, I'm sure, I suppose this is sort of a fictional book.
No, it's a straightforward
book. It was a straightforward book. Well, believe me, there are cults, there are secret societies. You realize that of our last 12 presidents, prior to George W. Bush, six of them were either Masons or were closely aligned with Masonry. And of course, we have frankly satanic cults here in America. We have, for instance, the media is never going to tell you that David Bernstein, the son of Sam Keller, was part of a secret cult known as the Process that Charles Manson was associated with. It was all part of the same satanic cult. And of course, you will never hear that discussed on CBS, ABC, or NBC. We have satanic cults involved in pedophilia, and of course, that's covered in the book, The Franklin Cover-Up, the Jean DeCamps book. There is no question at all that there are these satanic organizations working at the highest level of our government today.
And that is how, whether you believe it or not, and I am an ex. Before I got saved, I am an ex-cult member of a different practices, many varying ones. But what I will tell you is that that is how they're able to conspire. Communist, non-communist, it's not what they're after. Communism is just a red herring. It's the one world government they want.
Absolutely. And every communist wants a one world government. Every member of the Council on Foreign Relations, every member of the Bilderbergers, every member of the Trilateral Commission, at least the leadership of Masonry and Theosophy and Rosicrucians, they all want exactly the same thing, and they're all working in concert for the destruction of freedom and the bringing about of a one world satanic government.
Yeah, what I wondered if you knew, you know, do you believe what they say, for example, about Ben Franklin being one?
Well, I think Ben Franklin was involved with the occult, and especially when he was the ambassador to France, and he was deeply involved with Masonry. I think when he came back home, his attitudes changed considerably, and I think that towards the time of his death, although he was fascinated with Christianity, he used to go to Christian revival meetings all the time, and many of his best friends were Christians, but he could never take that final step to give up his independence and put his reliance upon God. But I think that people go through various stages of their life, and I think that at one time Thomas Jefferson was involved in the occult. I think when he was very young, he came from a Christian background, and when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, he was writing from a Christian worldview. And then, of course, I think he got involved in spiritualism. We cover that, and I think our January newsletter this year, from his own writings. And then, eventually, as he grew older, why he returned to the faith of his youth. Whether we ever believed in the divinity of Jesus, I don't know, but he believed that Christianity, as he said, I am a Christian in the only way Christ would ever want us to be. But so I will never know what he believed. I have his autobiography, and he said, I've never told anybody what I really believe. But I believe he believed that the teachings of Jesus Christ were the finest ever. So I think that there were a lot of people back there who were very confused, but I think both Franklin and Jefferson grew older, they came closer and closer to Christianity. Okay?
Okay.
We're going to have to take a break here, and when we get back, we'll be going to Roger, and hopefully Mr. Vincent will be back. Thank you so much for calling. Do you listen regularly there in Hanover Park, Illinois?
Yeah, I fall asleep to you guys, listening to you guys. I always like WAAR.
Good. Hey, bye-bye. God bless.
God bless.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I'm Roger. We're not going to get to, we're going to go directly to Mr. John Vincent, who's back with us. Hi, Mr. Vincent. How are you?
Good.
Oh, that sounds ever so much better.
Good.
I'm sorry you had to take that trip, but going out across the country, we were getting a terrible, terrible echo on that, and they should have told you ahead of time we have to have a landline. Obviously, we don't. Why, we get nothing but trouble. So, anyway, we were talking about the influence of the Ford Foundation and these people who seem to have a different view of America. Do you think they're intentionally trying to change America?
Oh, of course, some of them are. They're globalist. They don't really believe in the sovereignty of our country. Huntington is making this point in his book. He said that there is an elite class that really has no loyalty to the United States. They're more loyal to the elites in other countries than they are to the average, their average fellow citizens in the United States.
Well, I agree with you totally, and I think it's so vitally important that people understand that. I think it's very difficult for people to believe that they're Americans who don't love America. They're Americans who have a different worldview, and this is the idea that what we really need is a world government under a new ruling elite or new ruling bureaucracy, and that's going to put an end to war. And that is the major driving force, because I believe, of course, these people... many of them worship a different God than I do, and that I think the majority of the American people do. So there is this drive to do away with American sovereignty, and one of the major thrusts of that is to using illegal immigration and excessive regular immigration. How much legal immigration do we have in America now every year? Do you have any idea?
Close to a million a year. Close to a million a year, and illegal immigration runs between 300,000 and 500,000 in terms of people who come in and settle permanently. There are more who come in, but they go back.
Well, no, the 1 million who are here coming in legally, are these, are these people who are actually admitted to get a million people, or are these people who come in legally and then just overstay their visas?
So these are people who were admitted legally.
Well, when did we massively open up our borders? I mean, this is so ridiculous because we see a rising unemployment in this country. Is anybody concerned about the fact that we have an awful lot of people here who are unemployed?
Well, the thing is, members of Congress don't risk unemployment too often because they've gerrymandered their districts in the House, so there's a very small turnover there. So, again, they don't have that much empathy for unemployed people, I guess. But it's absolutely absurd to be bringing in all this many people when we have a lot of Americans out of work.
And, of course, at one time when people came into this country, well, they had to promise that they would never go on welfare. Now it seems as soon as you come to America, why, you're eligible for welfare and food stamps and subsidized housing. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have with us now Mr. John Vincent, who is, of course, involved back in Washington, D.C., in lobbying Congress to try to take an intelligent attitude towards both legal and illegal immigration. He made the point that there are over a million people who come into this country legally every year. It used to be about 200,000, and now it's up to a million. And then, of course, we have rising unemployment rates here in America, and this will do nothing but drive down our living standards even further. Isn't that really a factor?
That's true. Business Week magazine recently had an article talking about how immigration was one of the factors that suppressing the wages of our working people. I think this is just outrageous. You have a lot of wealthy people in Congress who really aren't concerned about this, but I wish they did have more concern for their fellow countrymen.
Well, now, when did we increase from 200,000 legal immigrants to a million immigrants? Has this been a gradual process, or was this done rather abruptly?
Well, the floodgates were first opened in 1965. At that time, one of the leading proponents of this sort of thing was Ted Kennedy, and he said, "One thing I want to promise is this will not bring in 1 million people per year. Our cities will not be flooded, and the immigrants will be of different ethnic backgrounds and not just of one group coming in. And the ethnic and cultural balance of the country will not be changed."
He, of course, when did Ted Kennedy ever tell the truth?
Indeed. Not since Chappaquiddick.
The hero of Chappaquiddick.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he lied about that, and he's lied about so many things. And what is really so distressing is why this last year, why the Bushes, the Bush Family Foundation, to which George Herbert Walker and George W. Bush are both members, gave an award to certainly the most important and successful of the senators. And who do you think they chose? Why, Teddy Kennedy. Ted Kennedy. I just don't quite understand that. Well, maybe I'm just a little dense about these things as far as politics are concerned. Under any circumstances, what legislation, or is there any legislation being suggested at the present time to address the problem of excessive amounts of immigration, which is changing the demographics of our society, is changing the culture of our society? We have somewhere between 6 and 8 million Muslims here who worship a different God, who have a different culture, who would just love to see a Muslim America, because, of course, their whole theology is they want a country under Muslim rule. That is the basic Muslim belief. Every place there are Muslims, they want a theocracy. So why are we bringing in so many Muslims here?
Well, if you have people who want to play a strategy of divide and conquer, it's good to bring in people who don't assimilate very well.
I think that's exactly what it's all about. I think that the average American, Mr. Vincent, finds it difficult to believe that there could be people that obtuse, really subversive in their attitude, that they want to put us into a position where they can divide and conquer, and yet I don't see there's any other logical explanation for what's going on today.
It's the only logical explanation. I mean, there are many, many useful idiots who really believe that we can bring in all the people of the world of all kinds of different backgrounds, and somehow, some way or another, if we just think nice thoughts, we'll all get along with each other. I mean, such people are totally ignorant of human nature and history, but there are others who know exactly what they're doing.
Well, now, of course, many people point to people throughout the world who are being persecuted and already face terrible retribution if they were to be returned to their homes. Should these people be allowed into America?
We're making very relatively little room for these people now, and the ones we do bring in as refugees quite often aren't real refugees. You have a piece of legislation called the Waltenberg Amendment that opened the gates for people from Russia to come into the U.S., and if you say that you're Jewish or that you're Christian, you are automatically deemed to be a persecuted category. You don't have to prove that you are actually facing personal persecution. What we have now really is a refugee industry. You have many church groups and various charitable organizations that get big subsidies from government to bring people in, and they're making money off it. Many of these people could, who are genuine refugees, could be settled in countries nearby their country of origin, and given time they could go back home, and it would be much more effective in terms of money to provide for them there. It costs a lot of money to bring refugees here to the U.S., and they're entitled to welfare for the first 5 years that they're here.
Well, that, of course, is the most ridiculous thing in the world, because this has not always been that way. At one time, if you came in as a refugee, you either had to have sufficient funds to support yourself, you had to have somebody who would sign that you would never be on welfare. You get what you subsidize. If you're going to bring people into America and give them a stipend to be here, you get what you subsidize. You subsidize immigration, you're going to get a lot of immigration. If you try to get people to say, you're going to have to stand on your own 2 feet, you want to be here in the United States, fine. You're going to have to come in and start at the bottom and work your way up. Why, that wouldn't be quite as appealing, would it?
The economist Milton Friedman, known for his staunch defense of free enterprise, said that you can't have a welfare state and mass immigration at the same time. And he was absolutely right about that.
Well, certainly no other country allows mass immigration and a welfare state. Is there any other country in the world that is stupid enough to do what we're doing?
Well, Canada's doing it, and some of the European countries are doing it. They seem to be infected by the same kind of sentimental disease that we have.
Well, of course, the culture of Canada is beginning to change. I know that probably Germany is changing as it's opening its borders to the people from the East. At least they're the same culture. But now, of course, with the massive extension of NAFTA or whatever we call NATO or, I guess, the European Union, why they're going to have people from all over those Eastern European countries just flooding into Germany to get onto welfare and, of course, driving down the living standards of the people in the West.
What bothers me is this, if you're going to have freedom in a country, you have to have a population, at least culturally speaking, that is more or less homogeneous. Because if you don't, you're going to have various blocks that will split off from one another, and you'll have to have a powerful government to hold them together as one country. And in this situation, the constitutional liberties that we cherish are not going to be respected.
Well, I certainly agree with you wholeheartedly. We see this in Canada, where, of course, they're able to play the French Canadians against the English-speaking Canadians. And there are two groups are always at one another, and they'd be far better off if they just split Canada, let the French go one way and the English-speaking go the other way. But that's not what they want, because they want to be able to divide and conquer a bit. It's so effective for the politicians.
I was in Canada last summer. I was just amazed. See, everywhere I went, the signs in English and then the same message in French. Everywhere, I thought, you know, this is really costing a lot of money. And this was in Ontario where most of the people speak English, but that didn't matter.
I know, even on the cereal boxes, you know, you know, you're going to get the cereal and you see the messages in both English and French. It is really totally ridiculous. And yet, you go down to Southern California, you stay over in San Diego or Los Angeles, and you'll turn on television, you'll have your Vietnamese channel, you'll have your Chinese channel, you'll have your Mexican channel, and you may even find an English-speaking channel if you're lucky.
If you're lucky, yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's infuriating when I get on a plane in America, which, you know, has traditionally been English-speaking, and we hear the messages in both English and in Spanish. And, you know, some years ago, Senator Hayakawa, he was a Japanese-American, but he was an American first. And he tried to get through legislation that we would have English-only language in the United States. English would be the official language of the United States. And this was 1988.
So what we're talking about is language for official government business.
Right.
People can speak any kind of language they want to at home. We wouldn't want to infringe on that. But for official public business, English should be the language.
But, of course, he ran into tremendous opposition, so it was obvious that even back then in 1988, what's happening today was already planned, and, you know, they knew exactly what they were going to be doing. They just didn't want the average voting American to understand. And I think this is really what's so wrong with this, that these people are not honest. These people are doing everything, really working in the darkness, concealing their motives and objectives. They know that if they were to come out running for public office, whether it be for an elected office, perhaps for the Senate or the House of Representatives or for the executive branch, why? And they were to say they had no loyalty to this country, they wanted this one-world government, they wanted to be able to create conflict in our society, why, nobody would vote for them.
Exactly. They have to work in darkness, and that's one advantage we have over them. We can speak the truth and expose what they're doing.
Well, do you have
We need to speak, too.
Do you have much success working with the members of the House of Representatives and the Senate, trying to get them to realize that we're headed on a one-way road towards the destruction of America and everything that has made life so worthwhile here?
I think we're making gains in the House. The Senate presents problems because they're more insulated from the people. But there is an immigration reform caucus in the House now that has about 70 members. It's led by Congressman Tom Tancredo of Colorado, who's an outstanding patriot, who understands this issue perfectly and has really stuck his neck out to try to raise awareness of what is happening.
Yes, he's actually from Colorado, and I I know that he has a lot of support here in California, because here in California, why, especially in Southern California, they really feel the effect of the illegal immigration. And of course, I have people want to come here and work, you know, in the fields, and certainly if we need people working in the fields and we can't get anybody else, I see nothing wrong with them coming in, but they should be brought in legally, as we did years ago on the Becerra program. They come, they work, and they go home. They don't come here, work, and stay and indefinitely, and bring in their families and get their families free medical care and free housing and free welfare and free schooling and at our expense.
Well, when people come here, it should be on our terms. I mean, if they set the terms, then really we've lost our sovereignty. I mean, in the fact we're being colonized.
Well, we are being colonized, and I think that the Mexican government really likes this because it's a source of funding for them, and they've got all these people down there that they can't feed and don't have any jobs for them. Send them up here. It's sort of like letting the top off a boiling pot. You know, the people always have a means of getting out. They're not going to agitate to try to solve their problems at home. They just export their problems to the northern neighbor.
Exactly. I'd like to read a quote by the former Mexican minister of Mexicans living abroad, Juan Hernandez. He was brazen enough to say this to Congressman Tancredo. Let me read this. Quote, "By populating the United States with millions of Hispanics who are tied economically, politically, and linguistically to Mexico, we are able to exert enormous influence and pressure on U.S. policy and its dealings with Mexico." How is that for brass?
Well, I think that it's. I think he's being quite honest. But you know, you're not going to hear that from so many of our so-called conservative commentators. I think the American people have to understand that our leaders are working with these people who are really subversive to our influence. To our best interest. So how are we going to get this information out? How are you able to, your organization, disseminating this information across America?
Well, we have a newsletter. We have a website. We do advertising around the country to raise awareness of the issue. I get on radio talk shows. And we send out material to lists of people. We do what we can.
Well, I'm sure you do, and I know you've been doing a good job, and we've had people from your organization in the past. Well, would you like to get your telephone number, your website, information out, so if people would like to reach you, they'd know how?
Okay. Our telephone number is area code 540-468-2023, and our website is www.immigrationcontrol.com.
That's 540-468-2023.
That's correct.
That's immigrationcontrol.com.
That's right.
All right, fine. So if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to know more about the problems, certainly Mr. Vincent's organization is on the front lines of this battle, trying to get the American people to understand that we are invaded today. Now, if we were being invaded by a foreign army, everybody would be upset. Well, the truth is, we are being invaded by a foreign army, and nobody is upset. In fact, our government officials and the Ford Foundation and even many members of Congress and the Senate are doing everything they can to aid this invasion that is aimed at taking control of the political structure of our society.
And the word invasion is not an exaggeration. This is not something that's just happening in Southern California. Whole towns in our heartland are being taken over by illegal aliens. I had a friend call me from Omaha, Nebraska the other day, and he said the whole south side was just inundated with Mexican illegals. I'm from Georgia. There are several towns there that have illegal alien populations of around 30%. Dalton, Georgia, Gainesville, Georgia. This has just happened in the last 10 years or so.
Well, it was interesting that up in the San Francisco area, of course, anything can happen in San Francisco, as you know, but they're talking about letting illegal aliens vote for the school board elections, because after all, their children are going to school. Shouldn't they be able to influence who's on the school board? And, you know, you read something like that and you say, I must be mad. This can't be happening in America.
Well, I think things like that can happen in San Francisco.
And if it can happen in San Francisco, believe me, it can happen any place. Now, one of the things that I think we ought to really all be concerned about, everybody's concerned about skyrocketing healthcare costs, but what part do the illegal immigrants play in this skyrocketing healthcare cost that is really devastating many of our people? Because if you are a legal American citizen and you get to be terribly ill and you don't have any health insurance and you go to the hospital, they charge you exorbitant fees because they're cost shifting from everybody else to you. And if you don't have any money to pay for it, they'll attach your home, your jobs, your salary, your wife, and your family, and you become almost an indentured servant to that hospital. And yet, of course, so much of this has been actually created and the driving up of health care costs by illegal immigration. Would you like to address that subject? Because I think it's something that the average American has no idea what's going on.
Legal and illegal immigrants are putting a big burden on health care. It's just outrageous, though, with the illegals. I mean, so often they go to emergency rooms, and their problems aren't emergencies. They'll go there for the sniffles, as one woman explained to me who worked in one. And they'll have their problem treated.
And by federal law, the hospital cannot turn them away. And the hospital cannot charge them if they say, I don't have any money. So the hospital then has to do that and absorb the cost. And what happens if it's a serious illness? It's going to cost them $200,000, $300,000. What are they going to do? Well, they're going to cost shift that to everybody else. And since they can't cost shift to government patients like Medicare and Medicaid, well, that's going to have to be to the private insurance or to that poor, unfortunate person who doesn't have any insurance, who's unlucky enough to go to the hospital. And then, of course, why, the sky's the limit.
And this is just the beginning of it. A related problem is that illegal aliens are bringing in many diseases. At Ellis Island, immigrants were screened very carefully for disease. Those who had tuberculosis and other diseases were sent back immediately to Europe. I mean, there was no concern about their rights or anything else. I mean, the authorities back then were trying to protect American citizens. But today, illegal aliens come in, and of course they're not screened for anything. I was talking to my brother the other day who lives in Georgia, and a woman in his church tested positive for tuberculosis. She works with these illegal aliens doing work in a hospital.
And, of course, they're coming in, and they don't have the medical facilities in Mexico, and I have heard this from sources I've never been able to verify it other than stories that have been told. But the Mexican authorities will encourage people with tuberculosis to come across the border and then tell them which hospital to go to so they can get treated for their tuberculosis and get the drugs free, because they have to give them the medications free if they don't have any money. Because after all, if they don't treat them, well, then they could threaten the rest of our population. And we live in a world sort of like Alice in Wonderland with the Mad Hatter. And where is the outcry from the average American citizen? Why, they're too busy wondering who's going to win the NBA or who's going to win the bicycle race or who's going to be going to the Olympics, without realizing that their freedom and the freedom of our children is slipping through their fingers like the sand runs through our fingers at the beach.
All I can say is, Americans, wake up. Your freedom isn't free. You've got to work for it. And
Somebody once said, freedom never close thine eyes in slumber, for thy enemies never sleep. And believe me, the enemies of freedom are working through the Great Tax Exempt Foundation, specifically in this instance, the Ford Foundation, and their goal is the destruction of America as we know it. Well, you know, of course, the impact even on our educational system is dramatic, isn't it?
Yes, and illegal aliens have the right to a free public education in the United States, and now some of our friends in Congress are pushing something called the DREAM Act, which would allow illegal aliens to have in-state tuition if they want to go to college.
Well, here in California, why, they are subsidized. In other words, if you are an illegal alien in California and you want to go to a university, why, of course, you get the special domestic rate. In other words, it's much cheaper for a California resident to go to college than it would be for an American who lives in Nevada to come to a university here in California. So they actually subsidize the illegal aliens here in this state.
That is absurd. You know, some of the defenders of illegal immigration, the business interests say, well, what we're doing is just practicing free enterprise. You know, they hide behind that mask. Well, this isn't free enterprise. They get the cheap labor, but their cheap labor is subsidized by high taxes on the rest of the population.
But how is, of course, subsidizing people to go to our university have anything to do with free enterprise? They're not even laboring. They're getting a free education at the expense of American taxpayers, and they're not paying any taxes, that's for sure. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break here because we're going to have to say goodbye to certain of our people who are listening in the Great Northwest. Now, let me mention to our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there listening across America, we hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and it's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And if you'd like to get a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be glad to send you one. And then we want to mention, for those of you who are listening on shortwave, that starting next Monday, our new frequency, and this is from 8 to 10 Pacific time in the evening, from 11 o'clock to 1 in the morning Eastern time, our new frequency will be changing from 7.535 on shortwave to 7.315. We're guaranteed that this is going to be a better frequency, or at least equally good to what we're having. And since it's a 250,000-watt station, why, you should be able to hear us almost every place here in the Northern Hemisphere. So, again, that new number will be 7.315. That will be beginning as of the first of next week. For those of you listening in Chicago, why, apparently the station there is being sold, and they will have new ownership next Monday. If I could suggest that you call the new owners and ask them if they'd like to pull down our program, I will make it available to them free of charge and on a barter basis if they'd like to get some of our time to run their own commercials, why, that'll be available. But why not call the new station and ask them if they'd like to continue carrying Radio Liberty for those of you who really enjoy it in the Chicago area. Otherwise, you can listen to us 5 hours a day on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com, and you can get our evening programs there. That's RadioLiberty.com. Then, of course, the list of our shortwave frequencies are there as well. But if you don't have either shortwave or Internet and you are listening to the local station, then call it and say, why not carry Dr. Stan's program? Because we enjoy it. At least I hope you do. I hope you'll hear things here that you're not going to hear elsewhere, because we're going to give you a different perspective of history. We've been studying this for, well, 42 years now. We have a pretty good grasp of what's going on, the spiritual component of what's happening, because so much of what's happening just doesn't make any logical sense. And if you think it doesn't make any logical sense, you're absolutely right. But it does make sense if you understand there is a spiritual battle going on, and there really are spiritual forces. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the video or listened to the audio tape, you really need to. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. It's in its 7th or 8th printing, and to date, why, the New York Times just hasn't given us a book review, and it'll be a very cold day in that very warm place when the New York Times or any of the establishment publications exposes what I expose in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, because we tell you a secret that's been passed down for thousands of years by the sages of the secret societies, fearful to write it down for fear that if it was ever exposed that they would be executed, and we tell you what it's all about. The major force driving us towards the New World Order and the One World Religion. So again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And we'll be back, of course, for the second hour of this program, but we'll be losing our people up in the Northwest. Of course, hopefully many of you will have access to the Internet or will have access to shortwave and be able to pick us up. Remember, the secret to shortwave is a good long aerial. So, if you're in the Northwest, till tomorrow evening at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, good evening again. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Now, we're going to welcome your calls across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And if Roger would like to call in again, he had called in before and we had to let him go because we wanted to get Mr. Vincent on. But if you're, Roger, if you're out there, we'd love your call, or anybody else out across America who has a question or comment on this issue. I think this is such an important issue. Give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we'd love to hear from you. We'd like to get your thoughts on the illegal immigration invasion. And it's not simply the illegal immigration invasion. It is the legal immigration invasion as we bring in a million people a year. Immigrants, as our unemployment rates go up, we're bringing people in, and immediately they can go on to welfare. Isn't that great? They can get free things, everything free. But the trouble is America is running out of money. We're having to borrow $1.6 to $1.7 billion every day simply to meet our obligations. We're borrowing money from generations yet unborn, and this cannot continue. We have two choices. We either raise the interest rates and lose the economy, or we leave the interest rates where we are and we lose the dollar. Which way would you like to go? Because if you destroy the economy, why... the American people lose everything. If we destroy the dollar, we destroy the savings, the annuities, the bonds, the CDs, the pensions, everything that our people are dependent upon, and we convert this nation into a third world nation. And that's not my words. That's the words of Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, who are writing about what's going on today. And he's certainly one of the country's most astute observers. You'll find his syndicated columns across America. You'll actually find them listed up on the Internet. If you can actually go up on the Internet and look up Paul Craig Roberts. And he will tell you we're moving towards a third world nation. And most people say, oh, well, that's not going to affect me. Well, you lose everything you have financially. And you lose your job, and jolly well is going to affect you. Well, Mr. Vincent, how many people do you think we ought to be allowing into this country legally every year?
Oh, perhaps 200,000.
Okay, and certainly we could absorb that many if our economy is expanding, but our economy is not expanding. Our economy is shrinking. Yeah, can we still afford to bring in 200,000 logically?
Well, I mean, according to the Bush administration, job creation is on the uptick, but if you look at the fine print, you find that many of these jobs are dead-end jobs and jobs that don't pay very much, jobs that you can't support a family with. For a country to be prosperous, it needs to have manufacturing jobs, and we've had a hemorrhage of those in the last few years, thanks to the free trade ideology.
In fact, as Paul Craig Roberts wrote, we've lost 3 million manufacturing jobs in the last several years. And in fact, the employment peaked out in about 2001 and has been progressively down as far as manufacturing jobs. Now, we've been losing them for a long time, but never at the speed they're moving them out now. And it's not simply the manufacturing jobs, it's the other jobs. It's the travel agents. It's the people who give support for your computer and for your printers and support for so many of your electronic devices. And you call in, you get this nice-sounding guy, and his name is John. Well, his name is really John, it's Raj, and he's sitting over in the Delhi, India. And people have to understand that they're outsourcing our jobs to India because the people can speak excellent English. Not only that, but they've been stressing quality in their educational system. They've been stressing excellence. Here we stress mediocrity. Yeah. We tell our people it doesn't matter how you spell things, just so long as you spell them somehow. Doesn't matter about mathematics. Doesn't matter whether 2 and 2 is 4. It's how do you feel about mathematics. They call it fuzzy mathematics, and you can't run a society or a computer or a sophisticated electronic device with fuzzy mathematics. You've got to be down to fundamentals over in India, why they're turning out 40, 50, 60,000 computer engineers a year. Here in the United States, we can't get anybody into computer courses because they're not going to get enough money out of them. They've realized that there are no jobs here. Those jobs are over in India. In fact, even some Americans are going to India to get jobs in the computer field because they can't get a good job here in the United States. And the average American says this can't be happening. Well, I think we're seeing the demise of America unless we address this issue. And this is one of the seminal issues that confronting us today. And that is both legal and illegal immigration. Well, Mr. Vinson is our guest today, this evening, I should say. And how do you feel about the president's position of wanting to give amnesty to how many illegal immigrants do we have here? 8 million, 10 million, what's the number? Do we have any idea?
Well, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, it's around 9 million. They're higher estimates, though. Some go up to 11 and 12.
You're talking about 11 or 12 million?
Million, yes. Well, all I can say is you get more of what you reward. If you give amnesty to those people, then there are tens of millions of others looking and contemplating the situation, and maybe they'll make a run across the border, too, and hope that they, too, will get amnesty. I mean, when does it stop?
Well, I'll tell you what, the Mexicans don't allow people from Central America to come into their country.
Not at all.
They guard their borders, but they don't guard their borders to keep them from coming into America. They want them to come into America. But the trouble is, the leadership of both political parties is fully cooperating with the Mexican administration. And if it weren't for a few of the congressmen that are really dedicated to trying to preserve this country, why there wouldn't be any opposition at all. And I think that this influx, this invasion, of illegal immigrants that is being funded with your tax money through the Ford Foundation and other organizations will soon destroy the very fabric of this society. So, if we did make all of these, let's imagine the figure is up to 12 million, wouldn't that allow them to bring in then all of their relatives?
Absolutely. Once they get legal status and move on their way to citizenship, why, sure, they can bring in relatives who in turn will bring in their relatives and on and on and on. It never stops. We have chain immigration as the basis for our legal immigration policy. It's not based on our needs, but rather on the family needs of the people who come in.
And of course, I've heard it said that I know Glenn Spencer. I don't know if you know Glenn, but he has an organization. Do you know Glenn's organization?
Yes, huh?
And he has on the board of directors the man who headed the illegal immigrant amnesty back in 1986. And, of course, he was in charge of making it work, but he's very much against that policy, and he has said that if we give another amnesty in America, we will have 50 million more people here, and that will be the end of America as we know it. How do you feel about that? Is that an alarmist statement?
I don't think it is. I can't really vouch for that figure, but, again, you reward what get more of what you reward and encourage. And if you let people know that they can break our laws, then others will get the same idea. When they were debating the first amnesty in 1986, the congressmen who were promoting it made what Lamar Smith of Texas said was a solemn vow that would be the last amnesty. It would never happen again because they didn't want to set a precedent. Well, several have taken place since then, and now they're proposing more.
You're not suggesting that they were lying when they said that back in 86?
Well, that is a possibility, I'm afraid.
This is the tragedy, is that these people get up and they lie because they have no moral foundation. Ted Kennedy has lied through his entire political career, and yet he's been elected year after year, time after time, by the people of the state of Massachusetts, who seem to have lost their moral compass as well. And then, of course, the state of Massachusetts has given us another senator. His name is John Kerry. And, you know, this, of course, is a disaster. But the trouble is, I don't think there's a dime's worth of difference between John Kerry and George Bush. I think both of them are going to push exactly the same policies as far as illegal immigration. In other words, no policy at all. Let them come in. What are your thoughts on that?
That's absolutely true. Kerry said that within the first 100 days of his administration that he would propose amnesty, and he didn't put any limits on it.
Well, maybe if he was the president, there might be a little Republican opposition, because right now there's no Republican opposition to much of anything. They're going right along with whatever the president wants.
Well, there is Republican opposition in the House, and that opposition has stopped some amnesty efforts during the last few years. Bush has been frustrated by this opposition, by the Immigration Reform Caucus, and we can be thankful for that.
Well, I certainly am, and I think Tom, what is his name?
Contrado.
Tom Contrado deserves our thanks and our appreciation. We've got Carol calling in from Tulsa. I bet that's Tulsa, Oklahoma. Carol?
Yes, it is.
How are you listening to a shortwave internet?
Well, on 7535, and I'm afraid the reception is not very good tonight, and 7315 is also not very good here, so I don't know that that's any greater move, but anyway.
Well, it's not our choice, I'll tell you what. I'm sorry. Well, anyway, it's good to have you with us. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, on both the Kerry and the border, I listened to Glenn Spencer this morning. He was on, he called in on Alex Jones' program, and it seems that what he has done is he's very electronic oriented. Glenn is, and he rigged up suitcases with WMDs. Weapons of mass destruction, and of course they're fake, and it was marked fake. But to prove the point, he videotaped them crawling over the fence. So they went over into Mexico, and then they brought these back across the border and videotaped it, and then took them into the city of Tucson, and they did it again to prove the point that. Anybody could bring a weapon of mass destruction in a suitcase and or a backpack and never be stopped, and they did it not once but twice. They videotaped it, and they had he hooked up with Fox some way. Anyway, they told him not to use the video. The major news networks, although they interviewed him, they would not air this situation. And they would not let the American people know, you know, just how why. Obviously, it doesn't take anybody with very much IQ to figure out that if they really wanted to protect our borders from terrorists, they could do that. But they're not making any effort to stop them.
Well, I think, Carol, they know something that the American people don't know, and that there's a lot of this talk about the threat of terrorism is really all contrived to scare us into giving up our freedom. Because if there was really a terrorist threat, if there was really this Al-Qaeda out there that was intent upon disrupting our society, it'd be so easy to derail trains or to poison our water or to, set off bombs or to have some suicide bombers here in our major cities. And yet there's not been one major attack in almost 3 years. It just doesn't make any sense, unless, of course, we're not getting the true story about what's going on, and maybe once again we're being manipulated and lied to.
That's right. And as I watched the lies going on tonight, I hardly could stand it, but I thought, I'm going to sit and watch this man and see what he says. And so I watched the Kerry speech, and he lied and he lied and he lied and he lied. He lied about the sending of our jobs overseas. He voted for NAFTAGAT. He would not in any way vote to reverse that situation.
Well, he said he would.
He also lied about, he said he went over, and he did go over to Vietnam to quote unquote prove there weren't any prisoners of war left over there, which was the biggest lie that he told, and it just hurt my heart sitting there knowing what I know and having read Kiss the Boys Goodbye and know that that happened, and very recently, and that we still have POWs over there, if there's any of them left alive from not being starved or worked to death.
No, I think they're there, and the North Vietnamese would love to give them back, and John Kerry and John McCain and their ilk don't want them to come back.
Well, and how about the ones in North Korea and then maybe the Soviet gulags still? Are they not there either?
They may very well be. Gelson was willing to give them back in 91, and we didn't want them. We've got some wicked people in government.
Yeah, and he just sat there and told one lie on top of another that he would appoint a attorney general that would enforce and back the Constitution, and I thought that was the biggest bald-faced lie that he ever told.
Well, let's get Mr. Vinson's remarks on that, but thank you so much for calling, Carol. God bless you. Do you have any comments at all on what Carol's saying?
Well, and she's right on target. I heard that same report myself. The Arizona Republic, according to one of my friends, refused to have anything to do with Spencer's story, even though he reported it. I mean, you'd think that would be newsworthy. You know, the Bush administration is always playing Chicken Little with these terrorist warnings, orange warning, yellow warning, and whatever. But if they were really sincere about this, it looks like to me that they would control the border.
You would think so.
Yes.
Well, let's go to Fred, who's calling from Philadelphia. Hi, Fred. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, Dr. Monteith.
Now, you listen on shortwave or internet?
Yes, shortwave.
Well, how's the reception tonight?
Very good.
Okay, fine.
There's so much to talk about. I just want to, Kerry gave his speech. I wanted to touch on something like new and from the Clinton period. Recently, the Senate passed the $417 billion budget, no questions asked. There might be a couple ridiculous amendments, but they just increased the amount through the amendments. They didn't question the philosophy of anything. And 96-0. So we have a parliament, a Congress that is a rubber stamp.
Okay.
It's a rubber stamp. And then the other thing was, during the Clinton period, we had the Mexican bailout. And I seem to feel that something so odd was going on when a huge amount of money, I think it was approximately $45 billion, even though Clinton supplemented, I think it was a total of $60 billion, was funneled down to save those Mexican banks.
No, it was funneled down to save Goldman Sachs and other American banks that had lent to the Mexican banks.
And I'm sure, maybe you know about it too, but very few people, and certainly the mainstream media, didn't say that when they said, sure, if you can, if you really are not hard pressed, well, you can pay us back little by little, but make sure that it doesn't go back to the Treasury. Just send the check and make it out to the New York window of the Federal Reserve Bank.
Okay, that's Mr. Vinson's remarks. Do you have any comments at all on what Fred is saying as far as the Mexican bailout a couple of years ago during the Clinton administration when Secretary of Treasury Rubin arranged that bailout for Mexico so that they could give the money, much of it back, to Goldman Sachs that Mr. Rubin just happened to have been working for before he became Secretary of the Treasury?
Well, it just confirms what we have been talking about, how the elites in various parts of the world are more loyal to each other than they are to their respective countrymen.
Amen to that.
And it's not an exaggeration to say that they literally said, don't mail the money back to the Treasury, mail it back to the New York branch of the Federal Reserve because they act as agents for the Treasury and legally, and therefore it's all the same thing. Well, it's not the same thing.
No, it isn't. Well, do you have any questions at all as far as the immigration situation is concerned?
I think that the same legal techniques are used to allow something that's illegal to continue, as the financial ones.
Our job and your job, Fred, is to help us reach the American people with the truth. So try to encourage people to listen on shortwave or in internet. And we're gradually reaching more and more people all the time. Thanks so much for calling.
Right.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Mr. John Vinson, and he's with the Immigration Control Foundation. They're trying to get the American people to understand what indeed is going on, and the fact that if we don't stop this illegal immigration and cut back on the legal immigration, the America we know and love will cease to be there, and our children will be living in a third world nation. And, of course, they're going to realize that the reason this happened is because the good people, their parents and their grandparents, weren't really concerned about their future. Well, you know, we seem to find that the illegal immigration now are getting free welfare. Are they getting free education and subsidized education when they go into our institutions of higher education? They're getting free medical care. They're really subject to all of these welfare benefits. If you were living in Mexico today, Mr. Vinson, wouldn't you be willing to brave the danger and come to America, the land of promise? I mean, wouldn't this be the most normal thing to do, especially if you knew when you got up here why you'd almost immediately be eligible for welfare?
It would be a powerful draw, I would think. One thing, too, is that once they're here, they get to break all kinds of laws that we have to obey. For example, quite often they are arrested for driving without insurance and driver's licenses, but when the police stop them, the police just let them go. Now, if you or I did that, we would be in big trouble. Or if we tried to move a couple of other families into our homes, the people from the health department would come out and they'd give us a lot of grief, but these people get a free pass for doing that.
How can that be?
It's the reign of politically correct terror. Our authorities, in many cases, are terrorized by the fear that if they do something that these people don't like, they will start screaming racist, and they will be in a lot of trouble because of this. We are not going to regain our country unless we overcome the brainwashing of political correctness. We've got to say no to this. I mean, there was a slogan once, say no to drugs. Well, just say no to political correctness. That's all you have to do.
Well, it is not racist to be pro-American. And
exactly.
This has nothing to do with race. It has to do with an effort of people to come in here and violate our laws, to steal our money. And now one of the most ridiculous things, we hear that President Bush is negotiating with Vicente Fox so that the people who come up here illegally and work here will get credit for Social Security so we can pay part of the Social Security down there in Mexico. And I'm sure that our Social Security payments will be the largest part of their incomes, and they show it's not going to be that much. Well, of course, they keep lying about everything. I don't know why we should think they're telling the truth about anything else, but why would we be paying Social Security to people who've come here illegally and worked here illegally?
Well, I guess the reason is because we have such an overabundance of money to fund Social Security, so we can afford to pay for the Mexicans as well. That is true, of course.
I know it isn't, but the great tragedy of today is that the average American sees all these things happening and isn't concerned, and they have to be concerned, because we're seeing the demise of America. We're seeing the country that many of us love and feel that, others have fought for and we would be willing to fight for, being invaded silently. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Mr. John Vinson. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And what we're seeing, of course, is wide open borders. And when the Border Patrol does a sweep, north of the border, immediately there's this terrible cry of racism. We have these people marching up here in Santa Cruz with their red flags waving and, of course, demanding, that no more racism. This has nothing to do with racism. It has to do with enforcing our laws. but it seems that anybody who wants to enforce the laws to force people who are here illegally back across the border, faces losing their job if they're working for government. Now, my understanding is that that many times these people are arrested over and over again and sent back, and they just keep coming back, and there is no punishment for them. Is that really true?
That happens, yes.
Well, now, what about enforcement of our laws? Is there any way we could punish people for violating our laws?
Yes, people have suggested things that we could do. We could take people who continually cross the border and send them to camps and make them work. There are many things we can do to discourage them.
But we're not doing any of those things, are we?
No.
In fact, I had heard the latest brilliant idea that...
But we are protecting the borders of Iraq. We are doing that.
Yes. And, I had heard that one of the greatest, latest ideas was we were going to pay for air transportation to fly them back to southern Mexico or wherever they came from in comfort so that they wouldn't have to ride in a bus or be in chains or manacles or anything like that. We'd simply fly them down, leave them off so that they could come back again. I mean, what's going on is just total insanity, and I think that Glenn Spencer has proven that you could certainly guard our borders. He's done it with very inexpensive little planes. What the Border Patrol has done is buy a couple of Israeli drones at, about 50 times what Glenn has built his for, and they're flying them up and down the border, trying to give the impression they're doing something, but I don't think they're really trying very hard, do you?
Well, not at all. It's more show than anything else, unfortunately.
Because it would appear that the people in Washington, D.C., in positions of power, have no intention of doing what they're supposed to, and that is enforcing the laws that have been passed by our elected representatives. Well, now, I'm sure you must be in touch with Tom, Congressman Tom, that is so busy.
Tancredo.
I've never actually had an opportunity to speak to him, but do they have any programs at all to try to force the government to do what it's supposed to do, and that is protect America?
Well, he's proposed legislation that would put teeth in laws, and he's been working to have this legislation passed. It's still a hard road to hoe, though, because there are a lot of members in the House who don't want to do anything.
All right, fine. Well, is there anything that our listeners could do to help you and to help Congressman Tancredo? Are there any bits of legislation, or will people, if they go to your website, finding out about the legislation that is pending?
There is one bill for the House now that would cut back legal immigration a little bit, by 55,000 a year. It's H.R. 775. It would stop the visa lottery. Are you familiar with the visa lottery?
Well, why don't you explain that to our listeners?
Well, it allows the people in foreign countries to play a lottery, and the 55,000 of them who win get to come to the United States. It's not based on anything but luck. And a number of the applicants come from countries that have active terrorist movements.
Well, that's logical.
Yeah. You might remember a couple of years ago there was an Egyptian man who shot up the Los Angeles airport.
Yes, so I remember that.
His wife got into the country because of the visa lottery. He got to stay because of her.
Well, why would we have a lottery? I mean, I would think we would try, if we were going to bring in immigrants, we would try to bring in the finest people with the highest degree of training. Now, the quality individuals would be a credit to America rather than a lottery which smacks of gaming and everything bad in our society. Certainly, gambling is something that certainly does not bring out the best qualities in people.
Well, you would think so, but again, have people making laws who really don't care that much about the best interests of the country.
Right. Well, our guest this evening is Mr. John Vinson, and we're going to, of course, invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. As we explore this invasion of America that is being facilitated and helped by the Ford Foundation, by people at the highest levels of our government who seem to dream a different dream, to march to a different drumbeat, to worship a different God. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Mr. John Vincent. We're talking about the problem of illegal immigration. We're talking about the problem of legal immigration. And of course, there's this argument that's given, well, we're all coming from immigrants. After all, the only people who were here normally were the Indians. And so we would want, of course, to follow through with the slogan that's there on the Statue of Liberty about bring me your poor and your whatever it would be, and that we should simply welcome people from all over the world to come to America. Well, that was fine when we had borders, no fixed borders, we could expand to the West, but we've got to the point now where we have an organized society, we have more and more people here in America who with lower and lower living standards. We certainly are losing our job base, and of course as the unemployment rate goes up, and it's much higher than you're being told, why more and more people I know personally are out of work, desperately looking for jobs, and yet we're continuing to bring in other people who will work for less, and undercutting the very foundation of our wage scale. So let's go to Will, who's calling from Missouri. Hi, Will, did you have a question or comment?
Well, I have both, actually, a comment and a question.
All right.
In the first part, you said, send us your poor, and it's your poor and you're downtrodden. And so that in itself sets a pretty bad tone for immigration, that we are actually looking for the worst. And certainly if you're looking for the worst, you'll likely find it. But the other thing that I have for Mr. Vincent, and this is a question that has run through my mind now for years, part of the motivation, I believe, or that I see, for this runaway illegal immigration and the absolute ambivalence of the situation by our Congress and the INS, I believe only serves to generate empathy for the Israelis' harsh treatment of the Palestinians. Could Mr. Vincent respond to that?
No, I'm sorry, what was the specific, what does our immigration have to do with the harsh treatment of the Israelis for the Palestinians?
Well, because right now there have the argument, I guess, that the Palestinians are a great problem in their country, and they're building walls and separating and whatnot. And here tonight we're talking about what can we do? Do we need to build a fence? Do we need to put our troops on the border? And because of the large Israel element in our nation for the last 50 years and better, I believe that we have a connection in that, and I was wondering if Mr. Vincent had considered that or come across any writings.
All right, fine. Well, do you have any thoughts at all on what Will is saying?
I don't really see a tie between the two connections. Again, it gets back to this in this country. The Republicans want cheap labor, the Democrats want cheap votes, and the bleeding hearts want cheap settlement.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Will is calling us from Missouri. Will is raising the question, is there any similarity between the Israelis erecting a wall to keep the Palestinians separated from the Israelis? Is there any similarity between that wall, which is dividing the country of Israel from Palestine, to the fact that we need some effective means of separating ourselves from Mexico to stop illegal immigration? And Mr. Vincent felt that he really didn't think that the situation was parallel. Would that be a fair statement? Mr. Vincent?
I think so, yeah.
All right, fine. I think that, well, I would have to say that the reason that they want to build a wall there in Palestine, first of all, there are a lot of people who think that there's a very strong Zionist influence here in the United States. What the average American doesn't understand is the people who control America hate Israel. That you may not want to accept that, but we forced them to give 97% of their land to the Palestinians in return for peace, and there's not going to be any peace. And so what the Israelis are doing to try to cut down on the terrorist bombings, which are creating terrible disruption to their society, they're building a fence, and in those areas where they have a fence, they're not having any terrorist bombings because the terrorists can't get through. It's a tragic situation, but both sides are being manipulated once against the other. We're financing Israel, and we're financing the Palestinian terror bombers, and it really doesn't make any sense. We're financing Egypt, which is building up for an attack on Israel, We're over there interfering in all sorts of things and creating havoc all along the way. But I think that if worse came to worse, why, we could build a wall along. It would be certainly a lot cheaper than the alternative, which is losing America.
Well, in the paradigm there with the cheap labor, does the Palestinian group not provide cheap labor for Israel?
I don't think that, yes, there's some Palestinians who work, you know, in Israel, but right now they've got so many Israelis, I don't think they need the cheap labor. I think that I don't think that's necessarily a big problem. I could be mistaken on that, though.
A rabbi that I know has repeatedly stated on his broadcast that the one thing about the Jews, and certainly he should be able to use that word, is that they never became plumbers and carpenters, and it was one of their downfallings.
Okay.
Now, in that regard, by cheap labor, the other part of it is by the votes. Now, in Israel, their voting system is such that, again, the rabbi has said that they don't have to worry about the threat from the Palestinians militarily, but that they will actually vote them because they're reproducing at a more rapid rate.
And that, of course, is what's happening in Europe, where the Muslims are simply very soon going to exceed in numbers the French, the Germans, the Italians, and even in Russia it's happening. God bless you. You're absolutely right. And the one reason Israel has never wanted, of course, to really bring all the Palestinians who lived in Israel into their society is that very soon be voted out of power. That's what it's all about. It's all about power.
And that's where we are today with the runaway illegal immigration. We are rapidly coming to a point where the voting lobby is going to be so strong that we'll be singing the same song that they're singing right now in the Knesset. If we allow this to continue, they will outvote us and they will have our jobs as well.
Well, I think there's maybe something. I'd like to get Mr. Vincent's response to that. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Dr. Stanton.
And of course, Will's point, I think it's a very, very valid one, that if this continues, why, we're going to simply be voted out of our own country. How would you respond to that?
That's absolutely true. One thing to keep in mind is that the immigration going on today is not our grandparents' immigration. Most of them came from Europe. They had to cross a broad ocean, and once they got here, they lived in pretty much of a checkerboard pattern. You had Poles in one place, Italians in another, and so forth. But with immigration today, about half of it is coming from Mexico, one country. They're not divided from us by a huge ocean, only by the Rio Grande and the imaginary line in the sand to the west of that. And they have attitudes that are very different from the European immigrants. Our organization commissioned a poll in Mexico by the Zogby organization 2 years ago, and it found out that 58% of Mexicans believe that our Southwest properly belongs to Mexico. Now, in the past, you never had Germans moving to Wisconsin who believed that Wisconsin was part of Germany, nor did you have Italian immigrants moving to New Jersey saying that that was Italian soil. This is an unprecedented situation. It's a very dangerous one.
I think that you're absolutely right. And I think that we have to separate the people who are coming here illegally from Mexico today from
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.